How do we build our dreams when we don't know what we want? Learn how Flaunt solves this problem in 5 bold and glittery steps with radio host Laura Cheadle. Using a combination of best girlfriend discussions and therapy-based exercises, listeners are taught how to build their dreams and live their sparkle. Flaunt. Find your fetish, laugh out loud, accept unconditionally, navigate the negative, and trust in your truth.
Hello, welcome to Flaunt, Build Your Dreams and Live Your Sparkle. I'm Laura Cheadle, and today it's going to be just me, and I am going to be talking to you about learning and how we learn and how we can allow ourselves to become better learners. And the reason that that is important is because every day we learn, whether we know it or not. Every day we learn things. It's kind of a misnomer when people say, if you're no longer in school, you're not learning anymore. Or phrases like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Because whether or not we realize it, all day, every day, we are learning things. Now, I am a hypnotherapist. Part of what a hypnotherapist does is guide people and help them to learn or to unlearn certain behaviors. So if you think about it like this, everything that you do in your life is something you learned. And chances are the things that you do every day are not things that you consciously learned. There's things that you almost picked up through osmosis. There's things that you learned just by being alive. And what I mean by that is if you learn a certain thing, like doing math, you learn how to do math, then when something happens, like you're trying to add up prices of things at the grocery store, you're consciously doing math, and you know that you're doing math, and you know how to do it because you learned the skill, so you do it. But on a daily basis, there are all of these things that we do that we learned how to do, but we don't know that we learned how to do them. And this is a great example. When you are in a relationship with someone, either a friendship, or a romantic relationship, or a boss-employee type relationship, any kind of relationship, you relate to the other person. But nobody probably told you, hey, when you have a friend and they call you and they ask X, Y, and Z, this is what you're supposed to do. Nobody really told you that. Nobody probably told you a lot of things about relationships, because that's not really something that we learn. Unfortunately, it should be. We should all have required classes in high school that's called Relationships 101, and we learn how to be good friends, and we learn how to be good partners. Usually, we just learn how to become a friend by being a friend. And sometimes we make mistakes. And sometimes we learn it by watching other people be good friends or bad friends. And sometimes we watch a movie, maybe, about friendship, and we see, oh my gosh, Thelma and Louise, this is what they did in their friendship, and they were great friends. Or we watch, you know, movies like Titanic, and we say, oh, this is how a relationship is supposed to be. This is what Rose did for Jack, and this is what Jack did for Rose. And we learn by watching the movie, or by reading the book, or even by hearing a song, and we think, oh, that's what friends are for. This is what that's exactly what friends are for. And I'm going to do that, and I'm going to become a good friend, or I'm going to expect that for my friends. And sometimes that works really, really well because we're learning great things. And sometimes, because it's fiction, it doesn't work very well. So, regardless of whether you know it, though, you are learning. So that's what I want to focus on in this show, is how we learn, ways we learn, and kind of hopefully inspire you to become a little bit more conscious and a little bit more aware about what it is you are learning day in and day out, and also how to learn better. So when there is a change that you want to make, you are able to make it. So I said hypnotherapy, and my job as a hypnotherapist is to help people create change, which means help them learn a set of new behavior, as well as help them unlearn behaviors that they have learned in the past. So let's take smoking. People who smoke, and we're just going to kind of use smoking almost as a metaphor for any bad behavior. It can be nail biting. It can be eating too much. It can be picking on people. It can be stuttering. Sometimes stuttering is a habit. It can be any number of things. But we'll just call it smoking just to give it a bad habit, because universally everybody thinks smoking is a bad habit. So nobody is born knowing how to smoke. Smoking is a learned behavior. You have to learn how to smoke. And in fact, most people even have to learn to like to smoke. Because again, pretty universally, the first time people smoke, they don't like the taste. They don't like the smell. It burns their lungs. Any number of things. So it's so ironic that this behavior that you have to work on learning, at some point in your life, you have to work on unlearning. And it's that way with any behavior. Go ahead, I challenge you. Think of a bad behavior. Being angry, being defensive, any bad behavior you have, you had to learn. We all did. And I'm going to give you a second to kind of let that sink in, because that is a big one. Any bad behavior you have, or your loved one has, or anybody in your life has, any bad behavior, that person had to learn. We were not born with bad behaviors. Now that said, we had to learn that behavior from somebody. And again, nobody in the world sets out to teach evil. Okay, now that's not entirely accurate. Yes, there have been evil regimes out there and people, you know, go try to teach people evil things. But that is kind of an exception. Day in and day out, parents are not intentionally teaching their kids to be mean, evil, horrible people. Friends are not teaching their friends to be mean, horrible, awful, bad friends. We collectively, for the most part, do not have bad intentions when we relate to other people. Usually we're just living life, good, bad, or indifferent, and we don't realize that everything we are doing, people are learning from. And we don't realize that everything other people are doing, we are learning from as well. So that's why I want to do this show. I just want to wake people up and make them a little bit more conscious of the fact that learning is happening all the time, all day, every day. And once we're aware of that, then we can manage our learning a little bit. Okay, so here's the first part of that that I'm going to talk about. Some people are visual learners, some people are auditory learners, some people are kinesthetic learners. Visual learners tend to learn things better by looking at them, by reading. If you're the kind of person where somebody tells you something and you think, I don't know what you just said, give me the directions. Let me read the directions and process it for myself. You might be a visual learner. People who do math in their heads floor me, because even if it's a pretty simple math problem, you know, like 247 plus 392, people can just do that in their head. It's not that the math is too hard for me. I can add those numbers. It's just that you start moving the numbers, and when I do it in my head, I don't get it. It doesn't work for me. I have to write it down. I have to see the numbers in order to keep track of them. Some people are the same way. Some people are different. I am more visual. I have to see it, but I'm also tactile or kinesthetic. I have to do it. I sometimes pretend I have a pen or a pencil in my hand, and I start doing those little squiggles in the air because I need to kind of walk myself through it. Some people are auditory learners. They need to hear it. They can read it, they can see it, and they don't get it. They need to hear it in order to process it. So that's the first level of how we learn. We all learn differently. There's no right, there's no wrong. It's just being aware. If you tell me that, it's not going to stick. If I read it, it will stick. If you do something, it will stick. I do a lot of personal training and dance stuff. It's so much different when I work with clients one-on-one, either on Skype or in person, and I can actually get my hands on them and say, you know, move your shoulder blades down your back like this, or hey, look at the way your ears are not over your shoulders. Slide your ears back over your shoulders, and then they can say, oh, I see that. It's a different way of learning and doing, and oftentimes people will learn better once they have done it than if you just talk about it in theory. So anyway, that is the first level. Be aware of what kind of learner you are. Also, be aware of the fact that if you take a multidisciplinary approach, so to speak, to learning, no matter what kind of a learner you are going to have a much higher chance of really remembering and knowing what it is you learned. So if you really, really, really want to memorize somebody's phone number, write it down. Say it over to yourself. Read it to yourself. Take your hand, pretend you have a pencil, and write it in the air. The more ways you do it, the higher the chances of it sticking. So that's the first concept with related to learning. Understand what kind of a learner you are, and then work with that. There's nothing wrong with it. Work with it. The second thing with regards to learning, and this is a huge thing in hypnosis, is understanding our suggestibility. We are all suggestible. All humans are suggestible in different ways. And what I mean by suggestibility is some people are very open. If you suggest things flat out to some people, they accept that suggestion. Hey, you would look great in blue. Try wearing blue. It's a direct suggestion. You would look great in blue. Wear blue. Sometimes people will accept that because their suggestibility is direct like that. I know you want to quit smoking. Try chewing gum. Oh, brilliant idea. I will try that. Some people accept that direct suggestion. And when you understand that about yourself, hey, I am good at direct suggestions, then you know what to suggest to yourself. And you also know what kind of a coach or boss or leader might work for you. You can get books or people or friends and say, tell me to quit eating. Tell me, remind me directly. Hey, Laura, you're trying to lose 5 pounds. Quit eating. And then you understand that about yourself and other people understand that about you. And then you can seek out those direct suggestions in order to change. Now, some people have an indirect suggestibility. And it's not that you're being argumentative, but some people, if you give them a direct suggestion, they automatically block it. And some people automatically block it and counter it with somebody else. And you may have heard the term reverse psychology. It's basically reverse psychology. If you tell somebody, hey, you look good in blue, they're not going to wear blue. The way their brain processes, the way their brain learns, is by that indirect suggestion, and they're going to think, I'm not wearing blue. And it's not necessarily that they're being stubborn or argumentative. It's just that that is their suggestibility. It's an indirect suggestibility. So if you're trying to get them to wear blue, the worst thing you can possibly do is say, oh my gosh, why don't you wear blue? You would look great in blue. And like I said, it's not being stubborn. It can be frustrating. It can definitely be a frustration. It's not that somebody is doing something mean to you necessarily when they're that way. It's that they have that indirect suggestibility. So whether it's you that are an indirect learner or somebody else that's an indirect learner, once you understand that, then you can capture that and you can use that to your benefit. One of the ways that I do that as a hypnotherapist is I put in the suggestion, with or without your conscious effort, change is taking place now. So I see a client, they want the change. We do hypnosis, we work on the change. If they are a direct learner, and I know that, I can say, work on this. With your work, change will take place now. And they will say, yes, I will work, I will make the effort, and change will take place now. An indirect learner, if they hear that, they're going to say, you can't make me change. And they are going to work against their own good, against their own direct desires, because they are an indirect learner, not because they're stubborn. So in that case, the suggestion is, without your conscious help, without your work, change is taking place now. And it lets them off the hook, because then they say, whoa, no matter what I do, change is taking place. I don't even have to work and change is taking place. So then it's that reverse psychology. Then they go, well, I guess I'm going to work on it then, because without my work, change is taking place. So I better work on achieving my goals, because that's kind of like the counter to that. And then it's a win-win, because they're not working to achieve their goals. So they are working to achieve their goals because they're countering that. So I hope you followed that. It's a little bit tricky. With or without your conscious work, change is taking place now. Without your conscious thought, without your conscious work, without your effort, change is taking place now. So think about that with yourself. Do you like it when people are really direct? Or is there a part of you that kind of blocks that and counters that and goes, oh, I'm not going to do that? And just be aware of that. And then use that change and use that learning style to your advantage. And think about that phrase, with or without your conscious effort, change is taking place now. It's a pretty powerful statement, because it captures both of the direct learners and the indirect learners. And just think about that statement. And if you know someone's learning style, perfect, you can address it. But that is the perfect catch-all phrase if you don't know somebody's learning style. So you can use that with your kids. You can use that with your spouse. You can use that with your friends. You can use that with your employees or whatever. With or without your conscious whatever. With or without whatever, you're still going to succeed. Whether or not you try to be the top real estate sales agent this term, you will be. Whether or not you try to lose weight and get in shape this month, you're going to finish the month better than how you started. No matter what you do in work this month, you're still going to succeed. Think about all the different infinite ways that you can use that style of leading or teaching to truly make people become better people. Okay, so that's the second part. First part is understanding auditory, visual, tactile, kinesthetic. Second part is understanding, are you a direct learner or an indirect learner? Now, the third piece of that, and this is where it gets really fun. The third part is understanding the different avenues that you have learned things in the past and understanding, are you better being led, like with a carrot? Are you better having that carrot dangled down in front of you so you can follow that positive? Or are you better being pushed from behind? Are you better being fearful of the negative and you're trying to avoid it? Or are you better being led? It's the carrot or the stick. And not everybody is led all the time. Sometimes it is the positive carrot that pushes us to the next level. And sometimes it is that negative stick beating us that can get us to the next level. So it's not always consistent, but again, it's important to have that cognitive thinking, that understanding of what's motivating you and how you're learning. Now, a couple examples from that. When I got my very first job in a law firm after graduating from law school, I had a boss. And I'd like to say he was a bad boss, but nothing is ever that simple. He was a very nice man. Apparently, he was a fantastic father and grandfather. I didn't know him that way. I didn't see that side of his personality. What I saw was a person who really didn't connect, who really didn't take the time to understand, and who didn't want to relate personally to me at all. Now, again, that's not necessarily bad. You might not always want to relate personally to your employees, but let me give you the example. He called me into my office one day, and he said, I need you to file this motion. Now, a motion is something that lawyers file, and basically a motion is asking the court to do something. And it can be anything. It can be asking the court to expedite a hearing. It can be asking for a delay. It can be asking to, you know, for protection of, like, the property of one of the parties. It's just a request. A motion is a request that you put into the court, and you pretty much can ask the court to do anything in a case. And honestly, I can't even remember the facts of the case, and I have no idea what kind of a motion he was asking me to file. But he called me into his office, and he asked me to file this motion. And I said, okay, and I'm sitting there, and I'm writing down the information, and, you know, he gives me the case name, and he gives me the information, and I'm supposed to file this motion. And because it's the court system, things are organized. You don't just necessarily make up the names of these motions. It's a motion to, and then there's the, you know, technical legal name to do something. So he asked me to file this technical legal name. And then I go back to my desk, and I sit down at my computer, and I start researching, because I had never filed this kind of a motion before, but that's my job. So as I start researching it, I find out that they don't use this kind of emotion anymore. And again, I don't remember the reasoning behind it, but that was no longer a motion that could be filed. So I research it and I find out, hey, they quit filing this motion in like 1989. Nobody has filed this motion. The court does not allow this motion anymore. So I go back into his office, which was always a little bit intimidating because he's the big guy, and like I said, he's not real friendly or touchy-feely. He's the big boss, and he's scary. And I'm just this new little attorney. And I said, I wrote up this little memo for you. Apparently, they don't file this kind of emotion anymore. Now they use this other kind of emotion. And he said, no. And I was like, what? He said, no, I have spent 30 years filing that motion. You will file that motion. And I said, I understand, but they quit using that motion. This is the new kind of motion that they use? And he said, no, we will be filing the old motion. And I said, I can't. And he said, yeah, you can, and you need to. Well, we went round and round, and I finally went to another, like the second attorney in charge, one step down, and I explained to him, I can't file this. I mean, literally, he's asking me to file a motion that A, doesn't exist, B, the court directly has said not to do, and C, if I file it under my name, signing it off as the attorney, I get in trouble, and I'm not doing that. And this other attorney went into his office and had a ridiculous discussion, kind of a fight, kind of an argument, you know, where he had to explain that. And ultimately, it was resolved, and ultimately, the guy learned a new way of doing this motion, a new way of getting the remedy that he was seeking. But I remember that experience forever as being so negative to me. And I learned I don't ever want to get so old and set in my ways that I treat other people like that. I don't ever want to do this to people. I don't ever want to make them feel as frustrated and as scared and as intimidated as I felt in that moment. Now, ultimately, it wasn't a huge deal. I was not, you know, beaten. Nobody died. It was not like this life-changing thing. But for me, it was kind of life-changing because I learned a lot from his behavior about the kind of person that I did not want to be, about the kind of leader that I did not want to be. So what it was is it was a bad experience that taught me good things. It was the stick, so to speak. It was that negative experience. However, once I learned that, once I kind of integrated that into my head, I didn't want to go back and learn more negative lessons from that man. And I'm sure he had a lot of negative lessons that he could teach me. But I didn't want to go back. He's not somebody that I sought out even after I quit working at that firm. I didn't want to go back to him and learn more negative lessons from him. It didn't do anything for me. That's not the way I want to learn lessons. So, on the flip side, around that same time, I was a young lawyer. I was working in the firm. I was also trying to save money and trying to come up with some, I don't know, not necessarily business ideas, but I had been approached at around that same time by a Mary Kay lady. And I used the Mary Kay skincare products. And as you may or may not know, that's like one of those multi-level marketing things. You can sell Mary Kay. And I thought, wow, this is way more fun than being a lawyer. And they get you really excited about it. And I thought, maybe I could become a Mary Kay consultant. And I actually did. And believe it or not, I still sort of sell Mary Kay in that I buy the products and I use them myself and my mom uses them and my friends use it. So it's not like I'm out there selling it, but I have, you know, a group of people that I sell the products to because I liked the products and I think it's a fantastic business opportunity. It's just that it's not what I'm doing full time because I'm building my dreams and living my sparkle in other ways. Yay! Anyway, I digress. I started learning about the Mary Kay way. And I read the Mary Kay on People Management book, and I went to a lot of the Mary Kay training seminars. And that entire philosophy is praising people to success. It's focusing on the positive. It's giving them all the happy stuff to look ahead and to see where they could be. It's about sharing the success stories of the women who were on public assistance, who were, you know, single women with four kids and on public assistance and had no education and no anything, and how Mary Kay saved their lives and made them multimillionaires. And those are real stories, and they're valid stories, and they are just the flip side of what I had learned in the law firm.
And it was interesting to compare and contrast and to say, wow, this guy frustrated the heck out of me, and I learned how not to manage people from his behavior. And then on the flip side, after work, I would go to my Mary Kay meetings, and I would learn from these women clapping, yay, and cheering, woo, and jumping up and down and saying, you did it. You facialed 7 women this week. That's awesome. Let's facial 10 women next week. Let's recruit. Let's do all of this stuff. And it was that whole praising people to success. And through that, they would give me a vision of what I could do. They would give me a vision about what kind of leader I could be. And what I appreciated about that is it was what kind of leader I could be in any realm. They showed me how to praise people to success. They showed me about how to give people a vision. They taught me this one little trick. At the monthly meet or the weekly meetings, we had weekly sales meetings, and they would have these tiny little prizes. I mean, it would be like a pink pen and a pink notepad, and they would put it out there, and they would say, next week, the person who sells the most or who does the most skincare classes, the person who recruits the most and has the most recruiting interviews is going to get this pink pen that writes in pink ink and this little notepad of pink paper. And oh my gosh, we would all work so hard to win that little, you know, pen and paper. Now, it didn't matter that you could have probably gone to Walgreens and picked up that same pink pen and that same pink pad of paper for, what, $5? The point was we were recognized at the sales meeting that next week. We were stood up in front of our sister consultants, and they would clap, yay, and they would cheer, woo, you did it. And then there would be a next prize. Next Monday, whoever does the best thing gets a bouquet of flowers. And we would all go, ah, bouquet of flowers. And same thing. We could have gone to the grocery store and picked up our own $10 bouquet of flowers. But the point was, we would have been recognized in front of everybody and handed the flowers like we were Miss America. And we worked for that. We worked for that positive reinforcement. So it's, again, understanding. Does that motivate you? Does it feel so good to you to stand up in front of people that you will work extra hard at succeeding because you want the positive strokes? Or do you do better fighting that negative? Now, here's another example of fighting the negative. My husband had a difficult childhood. His family did not have a lot of money, and for his high school years, he ended up in a small town. And he's not a small town person, and he didn't like that because that's not his personality. It's not that there was anything wrong with a small town. It was just that that's not his personality, and moving from a larger environment, going into the small town, he found it suffocating. For him, being in that negative environment was hugely motivational because he wanted out. And it was really powerful for him to see people living in a manner that he didn't like because it empowered him to get the heck out. And when he would see people living in a very restrictive manner, it would empower him to get out, which I think is an interesting thing. At some point, whether it's too positive or negative, it doesn't matter. At some point, there's often that turning point. Yes, it can be motivational to be with people who you, it's not that you don't like. I want to be careful because it's not that you're being with people who are less than you, because people choose their own life. It's not necessarily people who are restrictive in a bad way, but it's a life choice. And when you're with people who are living in a manner that you don't want to live, it can be very motivational because you can look around and say, I don't want to be whatever it is. And again, it's hard to say, I don't want to be with poor people, because that's not it. Poor people can be great, valid, wonderful people. I'm having a hard time putting the words to it and without sounding judgmental. He did not want to be of that class. He did not want to be of that. He did not want to be in that lifestyle. There are people who live in that small town today who are fantastic, wonderful people because they are living and doing what they want to do. It's just that he aspired to more. And it's not always good to aspire to more, and it's not always good to aspire to less. It's aspiring to where you want to be. I guess that's the best way to say it. It's not that if you don't completely live this amazing life, you're a bad person. But he didn't want to live that life. He wanted more. He wanted more. He wanted a higher level job. He wanted, quite frankly, he wanted more money, and there's nothing wrong with that. He wanted to do more. He wanted to be more. He had a high school coach who pulled him aside at one point and said, most people in this town, their ultimate life goal is a four-wheel drive with a gun rack in the back. I think you want more. And my husband, it was like that lit the fire under him. That created the fear. Oh my gosh, I want more than a four-wheel drive and a gun rack. That's not what I want at all. And it created that panic, that urgency that I don't want this at all and I need to move on. So it was that negative, it was that stick that drove him hard to get back to the city, to get to college, to get his Juris Doctorate, to succeed in life. And when he went back for all of his reunions, he's been to his 10, 20, and his 30 year, and he goes back to visit too. Yes, he legitimately cares about people there too. Yes, there's that piece of it. It's not that he's using them for bad things, but he always comes home and says, oh my gosh, that could be me, and I am so thankful I got out. I am so thankful I've changed. I've experienced more. I see a better way to do things. Like a perfect example, and some of this is generational and some of this is regional and some of this is just whatever. He has an aunt and he went to visit her. And on the back of the couch was a wooden spoon. And he's telling me this. I wasn't there at that visit. And I said, why was there a wooden spoon on the back of the couch? And he says, well, it's the whipping spoon. Every time your kids, your grandkids misbehave, you'd pull out the spoon and you'd whap, whap the spoon in your palm to remind your kids that you can whap them anytime they misbehave. And it, to me, that was horrifying. I was like, oh my God, you can never visit her again. That's awful. And for him, he said, no. It's inspirational to me because I know better. I broke out of that culture where all you have is the whipping spoon. And now I understand a variety of ways to motivate my kids. I understand a variety of ways and methods at correcting my kids. I've taken the love and logic classes. I've read books like 1-2-3 Magic. I have learned other ways of discipline or guiding or correcting my children. And he said, for me, it's really good to go back and see that because I can see how far I have come. I can see how much more broad and rich of a life experience I have had, and that thrills me because I've done it, and that motivates me because I know no matter how much more I learn, there's probably even more there for me to learn. I know that people now probably look at me with my tools and say, whoa, he doesn't know a lot. And he said that's motivational to him. Now, to me, that gets depressing. I don't do well with the stick. I don't do well with the negative. I can have a little bit of it. If somebody's competing with me and they do something better, sometimes that can motivate me. Yeah, they did it and I didn't. But I tend to suck down and then be saddened by that or defeated by that or not want to compete with that because I'm concerned about hurting their feelings. So that's what I know about myself. Like my boss, if I had to have worked with that boss forever, I think eventually he would have defeated me. If I was constantly faced with negativity, it would have made me negative. It would have made me not happy. It would have made me depressed, and I would have sucked in, and I would have kind of imploded. I do much better with the positive strokes, and I know that about me. And yes, it took a while for me to understand. And it doesn't matter if it's in the work environment, like I gave the Mary Kay and the law firm example. Those are both work. But it's also in the home environment. Let's face it. Relationships are challenging. And again, it doesn't matter if it's a friendship or if it's a romantic relationship or whatever. If you have been in a relationship for any extended period of time, you are going to get into disagreements with people. People are going to do things different than the way you do them. And in that relationship, you will have to negotiate. Because you were in relationship and you either keep the relationship and you negotiate a position that is mutually beneficial for both of you, or you get out of that relationship. So, if you've been in a relationship for any extended period of time, you will understand this concept. Do you do better with somebody saying, my way or the highway? This is what we're going to do. My position, work around it. And some people do. Sometimes it's refreshing to have somebody say, you know what? I am going to the 8 o'clock movie of whatever movie it is. Do you want to come or not? And then you can choose. You know what? Nope, I don't like war movies. Or nope, 8 o'clock doesn't work for me. And then you know, and you know where you stand, and you know where they stand, and you move on. That's more like that negative thing. Sometimes it's better to have that collaboration. I kind of feel like a movie. I kind of feel like a war movie, and I kind of feel like one at 8 o'clock. And then you can say, you know what? I'm more into a romance, and I'm more into an earlier movie. What do you think? And then you can kind of do that back and forth. Both sides are valid. But it's important to know what you work best with. And again, you can change. For example, I'm going through a really stressful time, and last week, just because I have so much work to do, I don't know if you've ever been in that point where you have so much work to do and you think, it doesn't matter how fast I run and how much work I get done, I can never unbury myself. I've been in a point like that lately, and it's been getting really frustrating. And I told my husband, what I need from you is, I need you to take care of me right now. I need you to like literally give me a hug and kiss me on the cheek and say, it's going to be okay. I need that real gentle, soft lead right now. I need you just to take care of my emotions and to tell me I'm doing good. Because then I will be like, yay, I am doing good. And I'm such a good writer. And I'm so dedicated. And I told him that's what I need right now, because that is what I need right now. There have also been times that I've told him, I need you to kick me in the tush. I need you to tell me to stop it, to quit doing whatever it is that I'm doing to waste time, and to kick me into high gear. I need you to withhold whatever. I need you to push. I need you to be mean and to make me do it. I need that stick. By and large, I mostly need the positives, but sometimes I need the negatives. But just having that cognitive understanding of what it is you need helps you put it into words and then helps you to ask for what it is that you need. But before we can ask from another, we need to know what we need in ourselves. which is a big one. So let's just kind of move back and recapture that. First thing was understanding. Are we a visual learner, an auditory learner, a kinesthetic, tactile learner? First piece. Second piece, do we learn by direct suggestion or do we learn by indirect suggestion? And then the third piece, do we learn by positive reinforcement or do we learn by negative reinforcement? Once you have an understanding of kind of those three pieces of the puzzle, you will have a much greater chance of learning about other people and how to motivate them, as well as learning about yourself and how to motivate yourself and how to ask other people to motivate you. Because there's nothing wrong with telling other people what it is you need. Moving back to that positive and negative example, and kind of that fine line between positive and negative motivation, there was a point in my, I don't even want to say Mary Kay career because it's I still have a Mary Kay career in a way, but there was a point where I went to a seminar, which is like their annual meeting with a friend, and the positivity was too much. And she was feeling the love, and she was in the moment, and she was bouncing up and down, singing and clapping, and it was too much for me. And usually I'm the happiest, perkiest, bounciest person on the planet, but there legitimately was a place where I was watching all these women dance around cheering, and I just thought, gag me. This is so overdone. This is phony. This is fake, blah, 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 blah. And it really hit me negatively. Now, 6 months earlier, it was the best thing in the world, and I came home so jazzed and so enthusiastic. It just hit me wrong. It was too much positivity. It was not enough of the practical, real-world part, and I literally went back to my hotel and was like, you stay for the rest of the seminar. I am over all of this bouncy, happy, frou-frou stuff. Done. And that was fine, too. That's valid, too. That's understanding that point of, I don't need this anymore. On the flip side, one of the things that I am working on right now is building my platform. I've got a book coming out, and I'm going to do a radio show on that book in the next few weeks to kind of give you a heads up and the excitement over all of that. One of the things that I needed to do is increase my platform, which means increase the number of followers that I have on social media. And I'm thinking, yay, I have so many clients and I have so many friends and family, and increasing my followers, that is not going to be a problem. And then my agent said, yeah, we need to get you around the 50,000 follower mark. And my heart sank because I thought, 50,000? 50,000? Are you kidding me? That's so much higher than I even was thinking. And it was like a blow because 50,000, how do you get there? How do you do that? And instead of being motivational, hey, I can increase it to 10,000. I can do that. 10,000, yay. Give me a goal. I can reach it. 50,000 was like popping the balloon. Oh. That's not going to be easy. Is that even doable? And I had all those negative thoughts. Negative, negative, negative. I can't do that. I can't do that. Oh, my gosh, that's too much. Blah, 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 blah. And all those negative voices started kicking. I'm going to quit. I can't do this. That's too much. Who am I? What am I thinking? Not that many people care about me. And that was that negative flip, just the same way that I had that positive flip. So, again, be aware. What saved me was the fact that I understand learning and learning styles, and I can work with my own learning style, and I can take that piece of news that kind of deflated me, and I can spin that positively, and hopefully I can get myself motivated in a different way so I can make that work, because ultimately that is what I want to have happen. Ultimately, I want my book to be successful. Not only to be successful, but I want it to be wildly, crazily successful. So I'm going to do what it takes to make it successful. And in order to do that, I need to understand my learning style. I need to understand if I'm auditory, visual, kinesthetic. I need to understand if I learn by direct or indirect suggestion. I need to understand if I'm motivated by somebody dangling the carrot out in front of me. Laura, your book will be a bestseller if this is what you do. Yay! Or, Laura, you will fail unless you do this, that, and the other thing. Go! You don't want to fail. So it's the understanding and the working with all aspects of that that will ultimately make me successful and give me what I want. So I want you to understand that about yourself. And also, going back to the very beginning, we learn every day whether we know it or not. And like I was saying, when we use math, we're obviously using a learned skill. When somebody tells you this is what I need you to do, it's obviously a learned skill. Move just into your daily life. What are you feeding yourself every day? If you use any kind of social media, if you watch TV, if you listen to the radio, that's what you're feeding yourself. What are you feeding yourself? Are you watching news and it's negative? Are you reading and watching inspirational material and it's positive? What you expose yourself to is what you are learning. Have you ever noticed whatever happens with a group of friends tends to happen to you too? Is it that everybody around you is getting a divorce and having a bad relationship? Or is it that negativity breeds negativity? Is it that relationship problems breed more relationship problems? Because you sit there and you listen to your girlfriend say, oh my gosh, you won't believe what my husband does. And you go, yeah, mine does too. And the other friend goes, oh, yeah, and do you know what else mine does? And then you kind of get in that negativity cycle. Or is it that you all sit there together and are like, my kids are the best, my husband is the best, my family is the best, my parents always do this for me, and other people say, yes, mine do that too, they watch the kids and it's wonderful, and then it gives my husband and I a chance to go out, and then you go, yes, and did you know my husband bought me flowers, and then you go, yes, and then my kids did this, and then it breeds positivity. Who do you have around you and what are you learning from them? Are you learning the positive or are you learning the negative? Same thing with fitness. Look at the people around you. Are you all having a healthy lifestyle or are you all struggling? You will learn from the people around you. Whether or not you've given conscious thought to that in the past, think about it now. What are these people teaching you? Yes, you can have Wine Wednesday with girlfriends, and you can complain, and you can whine, and you can get stuff off your chest. But then on Thursday, are you back at the gym, and are you back positive? On Friday, are you doing things to build each other up? On Saturday, are you supporting each other? Whoops, there's a little dip, something happened, and you bring each other back up. Or do you continue to spiral down? Because you were learning from these people. So ask yourself, what am I learning from the people around me? It's not that you're dissing all your negative friends. It's not that you're, you know, cutting people off because they're negative. But it is being consciously aware of the positive people and the positive things in your life. And also being consciously aware of the negative people and the negative things in your life and understanding your learning styles and understanding that you're learning from that as well. If you're watching the news every night and it's negative, that's what you're learning. every negative thing that you're around, whether it's a health crisis or a news cycle, whatever, it doesn't matter. Counter it with something positive and recognize that that's what you're learning. Be aware. If you're a visual learner and you're reading negative articles on Facebook and on social media or just MSN.com because it's your home screen and you read negative stuff, every time you click on negative stuff and you're reading negative stuff, you're teaching yourself negative stuff. If you're an auditory learner and you're listening to about the devastation and Puerto Rico and all this horrific stuff, you're teaching yourself negative stuff. Counterbalance it with positive. For everything negative, give yourself that positive. For everything that's defeating and miserable, do something positive. Anyway, I think we've kind of covered that up, covered that enough. I just want to encourage you to open your eyes and to understand learning. Learning does not stop when we leave school. Learning happens every single day of our life. We learn from each other. We learn from the TV, the radio, social media. We learn from ourselves. Understand your learning style. Understand what motivates you. And by all means, understand that everything in life is teaching you something. And challenge yourself to learn what you want to learn. Challenge yourself to be selective and thoughtful. And that no matter what, with or without your conscious thought, you will be learning more, better, and brighter things each and every day. Have a fantastic, wonderful learning week. And don't forget to flaunt.
Tune in next time to Flaunt. Build your dreams, live your sparkle with radio host Laura Cheadle every Wednesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Come release outdated labels, roles, and scripts. Reveal the calling of your soul and re-choreograph your own life, even when you're unsure of what you want. In 5 bold and glittering strokes, you too can build your dreams and live your sparkle. Find out more about Laura at pyramidfusion.com.